Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Peace be with you. I am Bruce Wozniak. This is Catholic Sports Radio, located at the intersection of your faith life and sports life, and on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and lots of other platforms. We hit the three-year anniversary of this show at the beginning of this month. Shame on me for not properly celebrating that milestone, but thank you so much nonetheless for joining me for this and hopefully many other episodes, including those who have been listening for whatever length of time over the first 3 years, and to the great guests that have been on CSR over that period of time. The show website is CatholicSportsRadio.net, where you'll find lots to engage with, including logos to click on to follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Speaking of the website, unless this happens to be your first time listening, you know by now that CatholicSportsRadio.net was built by Merchantside Marketing Group. You should know that when choosing a company to do your website, there needs to be a skill set that includes the following, all of which they can provide: a marketer, a graphic artist, a professional writer, and someone to do the coding, C-O-D-I-N-G, the coding on a website. I don't want to get deep into the weeds on that note and delve into tech speak, so I'll leave that to the experts and recommend that you use one of Merchantside Marketing Group's ads on CatholicSportsRadio.net to go over to their website and contact them. Remember, they're not paying me to say this. They're not a paid sponsor of the show. I just love the job they did building the website for me. I've said that their owner is a devout Christian, and we all know the value of a good referral nowadays. So get in touch and let them know you heard about them on Catholic Sports Radio. Now on to my ministry moment for this episode. We can compile quite a hearty list of all the wonderful takeaways from sport. Yes, the thrill of victory, but even just the relationships and friendships that get made, the benefits that I'm often heard talking about, such as teamwork, physical fitness, and good sportsmanship, the list goes on. But reaching a point where you're done with sports is tough. Retiring, an injury, or some other reason, it's quite often not easy, especially when it comes to, gosh, what's next? Now what do I do? But even here, we have an opportunity to mix faith and sports. We can look to Scripture for guidance. In the Old Testament, we read in Psalms chapter 16, verse 11, quote, "You will show me the path to life, abounding joy in your presence, the delights at your right hand forever," end quote. Friends, this is another reminder that we don't have to face challenges like this alone. We should look to our Heavenly Father in all things to guide us to decisions that will give glory and honor to Him. Moving on now with this week's episode, my guest is the chaplain for athletics at the University of Mary, a Catholic institution in Bismarck, North Dakota, where he works full-time with 19 athletic teams and around 450 scholar athletes. Ordained as a priest in 2010 in Minnesota, he is a graduate of the Pontifical North American College in Vatican City. Raised around sports, he began to letter in ninth grade as a multi-sport athlete in football, basketball, and track and field, including having been a two-way starter for his high school football team, which advanced to a state championship, and earning a trip to the state track and field championships in his senior year. He also hosts various radio shows and has even done a podcast of his own. Welcome to Catholic Sports Radio, Father Craig Vosick.
Hey, Bruce. I'm glad to be with you today.
Yes, glad to have you here. I'm looking forward to this. More times than not, I start out by asking a guest about where they grew up and their family life, something of a softball question, to use a journalism term. But let's throw a curveball this time. Ooh, see what I did there? And really open some eyes, some ears, and hopefully some hearts right out of the gate this week. I just finished mentioning about sports achievements of yours in high school, but what I didn't say, so that we can hear it from your words, is what took place in your senior year in terms of your eligibility in high school?
Yeah, that's getting right to the heart of things, isn't it? Well, I suppose it begins back in seventh grade when I first started dabbling with tobacco and alcohol and lots of other things with my cousin and some friends. But it kind of carried through high school, a sort of idea that I can just do whatever I want, that I'm sort of untouchable. I was pretty popular and ran in a lot of crowds with music, band, choir, musical, academics. I was excelling in a number of things. So I think, in my immaturity, I just thought I could do whatever I wanted. And so I did. And it caught up to me many, many times because it turns out you can't do whatever you want and get away with it. So in 10th grade, I got suspended for substance abuse during the basketball season. And so I had to sit out 2 games or 2 weeks, whatever was longer, which was 2 weeks because we had 6 games over Christmas break that year. And then I did not learn my lesson. So at the end of my junior year, for context, which you mentioned some of it, my junior year, we went to the state championship in football, undefeated all the way, and then lost by 1 in the state championship. And we were coming back with an even better team for the senior year. My class had the bulk of athletic ability. And I mean, some of the seniors that were graduating were excellent, but my class was loaded.
Where was this, by the way?
So this is Northwest Minnesota, out in the sticks, but okay. A little town called Warren, Minnesota. Okay. And so we were probably going to make a pretty big run the following year as well. And at the end of my junior year, anyway, I decided to go to a certain party and dropped off my buddies. I actually didn't drink that night, which is oftentimes I would have. But I had a section track meet the next day, so I laid low on it. Then it got really messed up. I started doing lots of arrogant, immature things, and got caught with alcohol in the school, actually, the following week. So I got my second and my third suspension for substance possession, association, and abuse, whatever. Second and third because they traced it back that I had the alcohol that night of the party, and I also had the alcohol in the school. And so then I had this 6 week or 6 game violation plus a 12 week or 12 game violation added on top of each other at the end of my junior year. So going into senior, so the first sport we're going to have is football, which was the season that we were all looking toward for redemption. Wow. and winning a championship. So I was suspended from school. They put me on the expulsion list, but I got off of that for whatever reason. And then I was in out of school suspension when I started my senior year, couldn't be on the school premises when I, when we had our homecoming football game, homecoming dance, I was still in suspension. And then, I mean, 18 games, even if we won all of our games in football, 14, all the way to state championship, I wasn't going to see the field. So I quit the team, because I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Why would I sit out the entirety of the football season, which is the most successful place that I would have had? And then sit out half of basketball, which was actually my favorite sport, just so I can have half of basketball and then track and field, which I don't care about. And no offense to the track and field runners out there. I didn't really care. I mean, it was one of those typical things. Like I do track and field to stay in shape, you know, kind of thing. So I quit, but my coach, I mean, this is magnificent. My coach, one of my coaches called me and he's like, Craig, where are you for football 2-a-days in August? And I'm like, Coach, I'm not coming. And he's like, yeah, you are. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm going to quit. Like, what's the point? Like, I'm not even going to play. And he just kind of laid into me and he's like, Craig, you know, there's people around town that saying you're a loser. Do you want to prove them right? There's people saying that, you know, you don't have any maturity. You want to prove them that you can't do this. You know, all these different things. And it ate at me for the next couple of days, even though I pretended like it didn't. And there was a lot of crying and yelling and screaming and, you know, just, it was dark and hard, but, I ended up going back, conditioned with the guys the entire senior year. Didn't play it down. The worst moment of all of it, and then I'll say a good moment, and then I'll stop there. But the worst moment of all of it was section championship for football. We made it back that far. But I should say, without arrogance, even though I was arrogant at the time, I was the fastest kid on the team. Mm-hmm. I was our primary wide receiver. I was our fastest and best free safety. I was the punt and kick return specialist because, wow, I was fast in the kick. Could run. So all of those positions in a small school then got deferred back to a junior or sophomore that was trying to play that position. They weren't as good as me for those positions. So I was watching them not do as well as I would have. And I was mad. I mean, I was mad at myself, but I was mad at them. And then we lost the game. And I remember the worst part of it all was I was inconsolable. I was screaming, I was swearing, I was yelling, I was hitting things. And this this young, like, ninth grader came up to me. He's like, "Hey, Vasek, why are you so messed up? You didn't even play." And he didn't know, like, that was exactly the problem. Like, that's exactly the problem. This entire thing is my fault. I'm standing on the sideline watching people not do what I would have done. So I'm standing here watching myself let the team down. Mm-hmm. And it was like the most horrible, horrible experience of my life. So I almost clobbered the kid. I jokingly say I almost had to attend his funeral a couple days later. But anyway, that was like the worst spot. And I'll just say kind of a moment of redemption in that, even though it's not a good redemption. I mean, it was like a kind of a, you know, a sports redemption, but it's pretty small. I mean, it was big for me at the time. But at the end of the year, so didn't play football, didn't play half a track basketball. In basketball, the first game that I was eligible, I'd have been a starter since sophomore year, so senior year, I sat at the end of the bench, my first game eligible, didn't know if the coach was going to put me in. He was a good guy, but, like, you know, I deserved this, so I'm sitting on the end of the bench. I remember getting the call, "Vasek, get in," and I was like, it was all worth it. Like, all of this sort of endurance to play again was so amazing, and once I got my first basket breakaway, I was like, "Oh, I'm back." And then, so then it went on, and we had a good basketball season, but I ended up going to state and track and field, the only kid from the school to do it that year, any only guy to do it that year. And so, like, there was this sort of beautiful cap to the year of my athletic ability, whatnot, even though it was a sport I didn't much care for. And then at the end of the year, we had our athletic awards banquet. You know, this is for our small school, this is huge. And so, like, everybody's there, all the people, like, the coach said, "Hey, these people think you're losers. You're going to prove them right. Hey, these people think you're sure and dumb. You're going to prove them right," all these things. So now I'm at this thing, and all the football guys go up on the stage. Everybody receives their awards for different things. I got defensive MVP defense for basketball. I got whatever for track because I was the only one that went to state. Okay, all these things. But then the football coach gave out all the awards. I didn't get any. Obviously, I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And then he stopped and he said, "I have one more award I want to give out. And this, to spoil it, it's going to be for me." But I didn't know that. And he said, this guy was the leader of our team. This guy was first down with every sprint. This was a guy that helped all of our players get better throughout the year. And he did it without any glory because he didn't play. And I want to give a special award this year. I'm still tender to it, even thinking about it now. It was so beautiful. I'm starting to cry. But and he said, "Scout Player of the Year award I want to give out this year." And he starts crying, this big, bulky head coach. The Scout Player of the Year award this year goes to Craig Vasek, and he started walking towards me in tears, and now I'm walking towards him in tears, and we're embracing. We hugged in front of all the football guys, in front of all the haters, you know, these haters, quote unquote haters. And I just wept, and I received this award. Anyway, that's it's a long story, I guess, but it was devastating. There were good things. There was a lot to learn from it all, but I mean, this didn't, like, convert my life to the Lord at all, but it was like this sort of athletic redemption thing. I don't know. So anyway, that's what happened. We didn't go to the state championship of football, and I still think about, not with regret, but with, you know, just that sort of athletic pondering of the past, like, man, what could have been. No. So.
Well, darn it. Now you got me all choked up here listening to that story, because that is a very emotional ending. But you're right. I did pick up on the word redemption at some point in there, and just that journey and the idea of hope, you know, and I'm very vocal about the fact that we have hope in every new day because of the Lord. And so I kind of think that maybe you are starting to get it a little bit. So I'm curious then, what happens the next year when you go on to college?
Yeah, so I go to college to be an architect. I wanted to make loads of money. I was being recruited 10th and 11th grade in football. Was not being recruited anymore senior year. So those things were all off the table. And thanks be to God that they were, because I was a disaster still. And if I would have entered into with that kind of brokenness, entering into a collegiate athletic department, it would have been the end of me. I mean, I don't know that, but I think it would have been. Yeah. But I found my way into plenty of darkness. Nevertheless, I was not going to class. I didn't care about school. All I was doing was sort of these quote unquote extracurriculars, with my buddies and, women and whatever else. And I got a minor the first week of school. My friends went to jail. I had to bail them out. I got kicked out by semesters and from the, dorm, but then, was on the chopping block with the university for academic, I was on academic probation, and then if I did it again, I would be expelled. So it's a completely disaster. I'm a talented man. I'm a gifted person. I'm personable. I get along really easily in every social context. I find myself. I can do whatever I want. All these things, and it's just like I'm a complete disaster at this point. And like, there's this darkness. Creeping in, like not even creeping in, but it's like front and center at this point around Christmas time, my freshman year. And this lady called me, this kind of older lady called me on behalf of my mom was talking to her. And she's like, "Craig, I understand you started playing guitar. We need a guitar player for our upcoming retreat. Could you come and play your guitar on our retreat?" And I'm like, "Lady, I barely know you." I didn't say it like this, but I was like, "I barely know you. I'm not going to mass at all. And I am not a leader or someone you want to put in front of high school students on a retreat at all. And plus, I just started playing guitar last month. So like, I have to stop every time I put my fingers on the chords, you know, like, this ain't going to work." So I said no. And she called me again and again, and again, sort of like this persistent woman in the gospel saying, "I want what I want." And I'm like, so I finally said, "Fine, but like, it's not a good idea. It's really not a good idea." Like, I had that awareness that this wasn't a good idea. So I took my guitar on this retreat. The first night, so it's Teens Encounter Christ. And so it's going through the death, resurrection of Jesus. And each day, and then the sending out of the church to convert the world. And so whatever, they have this the first day, I'm not listening, I don't care, I wasn't going to mass, I probably met my friends and the stuff that I was supposed to do. But then they have this time of confession for the Catholics, and if they were non-Catholics, they could go and just, you know, confess their sins to the Lord, all these things were. And I did not go, because I was like, I'm not even interested. I wasn't gonna do it. Yeah. And at the end, all the students went, and then, like, I don't know if there was a loudspeaker or just like this, probably the same lady walking around. And it's like, "Well, all the students went, so now we have plenty of time for all the staff to go." And I just like, "No, I'm not going.
I'm not staff, just so everyone's clear. That doesn't apply to me. I don't have to go."
Guitar player. Anyway, I ended up finding my way to the dark corner, the darkest corner I could, farthest away from everybody else, to a priest that I didn't know. And I was like, "Fine, I'll do this, whatever." And I didn't know how to make a good confession. Like, I had never made a good confession, even though I grew up Catholic. I mean, I remember lying in confession because I was like, "Hey, this guy doesn't need to know what I'm doing."
Wow.
Really hard-hearted. Really hard-hearted. And so I sit in front of this priest, and he's like, "Okay, go ahead, make your confession." And I was like, "To be honest, priest, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that looks like." And I said, "Okay, no problem. How about I just ask you some questions, and you just answer yes or no?" And I was like, "Oh, that's easy enough. Okay. So, have you stolen? Yes. Have you lied? Yes. Have you swore? Yes." And he just goes through everything that he can of, and I say yes to absolutely every question. That there wasn't one that I was like, "No, that's not me." Like, I was a disaster. And I remember, like, when he got to those more you know, touchy, sensitive, relational questions, or, you know, these things. I was like, inside my head, I was like, this is none of his business. Just say no. But out came the truth. I mean, it was grace. Like, out came truth. And I was like, yes, yes, yes. You know, like, yeah, I guess so.
Wow.
And by the end of it, I had opened my entire life before God through the priest. And he looked at me, he's like, you made a really good confession. If you're, you know, if you're ready, like, Jesus is ready to forgive you. And I just looked him in the face and I was like, I absolutely want that. Wow. Even though 10 minutes ago, I did not want that. All of a sudden, now this is the only thing I want all of a sudden.
Oh my gosh.
And he's like, great. So he says the prayer of absolution and my life changed. Like, my life, like, it wasn't like slow change. It was like drugs gone, tobacco gone, wow, girls gone, stealing gone, swearing gone. All this stuff was gone in an evening. It was amazing.
I'll say.
And my life, like, I mean, my heart, my body, my shoulders, my mind, my spirit, everything was just lifted. I felt like I was floating. Now, the rest of that retreat, I don't remember a thing. I'm sure I was terrible on the guitar. but I knew, the only thing that I knew at the end of that retreat and from that moment forward was that Jesus died for me and he just saved my life. And now I'm going to live for him because I love him. Like, that was, it was like, nobody taught me. It just came, yeah, you know,
wow.
It was the gifts that had been given to me that had been squashed my whole life. Now just the Lord is like, okay, he's given me permission. Boom. We're going to explode. So that was the real redemption. Like, embracing my high school coach at the award banquet was great, but like, this being embraced by the love of Jesus was, this was beyond anything that ever tasted.
No doubt. So I do want to move on, but just so that we cover it. So when did the call to the priesthood come? How quickly or how long after all of what you just described?
Yeah, pretty quick. I can keep it real quick. 2 months later, I was at Mass. I had been going to a Protestant church because I loved all of a sudden I loved the Bible. All of a sudden I loved praise music and singing and fellowship. So my buddies were doing this. I was going there, but I quickly found my way back to knowing that there had to be even more than what I loved about that. So I got a catechism and then I went to Mass and the priest stopped at the altar. This is only 2 months after the conversion. And Jesus just whispered right through me. It was kind of a loud whisper. This is what I want you to do. As I'm looking at the priest, and the joy that I experienced in my confession was now matched by this joy of this invitation from Jesus to Lower Seminary. So that's where it took place. And then I was in the seminary that fall.
Man, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the audience, I find myself, especially when I'm editing these episodes, I think to myself, you sure do say wow a lot, self. And I get really critical of myself as a host. And really, in listening to Father Vasek right now tell that story and me probably eliciting half a dozen wows, I think that's what the Holy Spirit is doing through this ministry, is bringing us all of these wow moments. And most importantly, as you're hearing testified from Father Vasek, it's showing the power of surrendering to Jesus. It's showing the power of what's possible when you do acknowledge him, when you do let him in. And the hope that we have, as I said earlier, the hope that we have in him every day. And you see, for someone like Father Vasek, who, when he was just Craig Vasek, the high school kid who thought he was cool and thought he was invincible, that's a place where you'd say, oh gosh, wait a minute, is he telling a story about someone else? Because this can't be someone who is now a Catholic priest. And because of Jesus, absolutely that's the case. So really great stuff, really great stuff. It's almost like, okay, well, thanks for coming on the show and we'll see you next week. That's a mic drop moment. But there's a lot more cool stuff that you're doing. Let's roll up our sleeves a bit with present day and the work that you do at the University of Mary as chaplain to athletics, as well as program director for Virtue and Sport, because I know the stories that you've just shared with us are helpful in the work that you do with the athletes there.
Yeah, absolutely. Incredibly helpful. Because like a priest strolls in, To an athletic department. They didn't have a priest in the athletic department. It's a Catholic university, but as anyone who's been in athletics knows, the entire life within an athletic department is almost all-encompassing, and everything else outside of that will not really bear upon it that much. So there was priests on campus, but these students didn't ever need to see them, maybe in a class from time to time or something like that, but they don't have to go to mass. They don't have to go to any of these things. So, to have a priest walking around in the athletic department when I first arrived, it was kind of funny. I mean, I almost felt awkward. I'm usually fine walking around with clerics on, but I almost started feeling awkward because I'd come around a corner and there'd be students walking and they would immediately clam up, these football players,
put their head down, they clam up. Don't make eye contact. Yeah,
exactly. They're doing that because they're like, oh my gosh, God just walked around the corner or something like that. And I was like, dude, no. So I had to be able to somehow get them to realize, no. Yes, I'm a priest and I'm happy to be a priest and I'm not going to shirk that. But I have a story as well, friends. And I understand what it's like to be going through what you're going through in life, just in general, but in sports and all these different things. So to be able to carry my own story to them in various ways really, really was helpful for them to feel like, okay, we can hang out with this guy. We can be with him. We can learn from him. We can trust him. We can, whatever. We can celebrate victories with him. We can go to him in our losses. We can call him and go and visit with him about whatever the things might be. So my work at the university, Monsignor Shea, president, has beautiful visions and a beautiful vision, overarching vision for the university. And he wanted to extend the mission of the university into the athletic department in a very profound way. Mm. And so, He knew of my background in athletics, even though I didn't compete in college. And he said, you know what, Father, we would like to bring you in because we really want to extend this apostolate of the mission of the university into the athletic department. Would you be open, Father Vasek, to be a full-time chaplain in an athletic department, working with 18 teams and just traveling with them and participating with them and just living life with them for however many years? And I was like, Monsignor, are you asking me if I'm willing to do my dream job? what's the catch? There wasn't a catch. It was like, no, it was truly going to be the case that I was going to be working full time with athletes. And that's what I've been doing for 3.5 years. So it's working with coaches. It's working with the scholar athletes. It's working with trainers. It's helping develop curriculum. It's traveling with them, praying with them. I have a master's in psychology, so it's them coming in. If they're an atheist, saying, "Hey, we don't have to worry about God, but we can talk on the human level." If they're just secular, okay, we can talk on the human level. I understand psychology, okay. But if they're a Christian, then okay, we can talk about we can bring Jesus into the equation. If they're Catholic, we can talk about the sacraments. Okay, fine. So whatever the background is, they can come in and I can just meet them where they are.
Yeah.
And I meet with students every day, many students every day.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And for the audience, you can see God's hand in the life that was being lived by Craig Vasek, the reckless high school student, because this was what was going to allow the Lord to use him as Father Craig Vasek to minister to student athletes who he can say, "I was where you are." And no, I can't help you throw a better slider if you're a pitcher. However, as a former athlete and now as a priest, I can show you the intersection of faith and sports, and we can do the things that he just listed out that's part of his job description. This is neat. In the lead up to today, Father, you mentioned to me about the platform of athletes and the need for conversion in the world of sport. Explain what you mean by that. Especially the need part of that statement that you allude to.
Right. So I think everybody can recognize that Hollywood and athletics, music, these places are within the culture incredibly lifted, elevated to a place of great prominence, and they have platforms. So I mean, there's just, we don't have to defend that. That's a fact, and that, I get that. Was able to come to see that better but with my work with Varsity Catholic and Thomas Wirtz and Fellowship of Catholic University students. He's really helped me to wrap my head around all of that. But the need for conversion is exactly that. If athletics is this place of great platform and great in to people's lives. So, in youth sports, high school, these places, like, coaches have great ins to these students' lives, these children's lives, because of sport. And we see it in the parish. I mean, it's difficult when people are like, oh, we can't help out at Mass because, you know, we got to travel for hockey or whatever. It's like, oh man, that's tough. That's, we got to talk about that. But, so yeah, this need for conversion is, this idea that if coaches, are going to be, investing in hundreds of thousands of children and young people throughout America, because hundreds of thousands of youth in America are like, I want to be an athlete, mm-hmm. Because it's just so great and I love it and there's a platform, all these things, then what are those coaches really bringing to those students? Are they bringing a sort of crazy idolatry of the god of the gold medal, mm-hmm. Idea to their way? And if they are, well, that's very troublesome for another generation of youth. And so athletes are probably tomorrow's coaches in a lot of ways. Now, there's other people that aren't athletes that become coaches, but like, there's a lot of athletes end up becoming these coaches. And so the world of athletics needs conversion because these are the people that, for better or for worse, are the ministers, are the pastors of a generation of youth. Mm-hmm. And so just to use an analogy in a way, when I arrived here, the athletic director said, Father Vasek, we have way too many people for you to reach them all. You need to invest in the coaches and they can become, you can be Jesus, they can be your 12 apostles, and then they can reach your teams. And I was like, dude, that is prophecy. That is phenomenal. I mean, this guy was clear thinking on this, that if the coaches get the gospel, if they get what athletics is and where it falls in the realm of life and eternity, then we've got a chance with our student athletes. So I mean, that's the idea, is that we need a conversion so that like we can proclaim the gospel through sport rather than trying to convert people away from sport so that we can get the gospel to them.
Yeah, and in my head I was thinking of a shepherd as you were talking about these coaches who have that opportunity to lead, and that's the place to do it, is, yes, of course, I'm here to teach you football techniques and strategy and game planning and so forth, but we also want to make sure that we're not glorifying sport and we're not only here because our one goal in life is to become a professional athlete and make millions of dollars. That may not last, even if you get there, and we know the percentages are so, so low that happens. So I do like that perspective of saying, okay, let's make sure that we're focusing on conversion and saying, what is it going to take to make sure that this is a huge part of the message that these athletes are hearing, because it's a great opportunity. It's a great place where the coaches are to be able to deliver that. There's something else from our preparations for this interview that you referenced that I'd love to have you also get into, which is our understanding of the purpose and objective of sport as fundamental.
Yeah, so this is, we launched a strategic plan for the athletic department back in 2019 here at the university. So I arrived in January and they launched it in November. So I've kind of become the flag carrier of the of the strategic plan. It's called Greatness Through Virtue. And it's very simple, the idea, but it's necessary. It's the thing that you can't really get sports right without. And that's to understand the purpose of sport and the objective of sport, and that they're not the same thing. So the object of any game or sport is to try to win. I mean, that's what you're supposed to be doing. If I'm playing Sorry with my nieces, I'm not trying to win, actually, because I don't care. I want them to win, but they're trying to win. You know, if I'm playing pool with the guys in the cafeteria, I'm trying to win.
Yeah.
That's the objective. And so we don't ever want to misunderstand that is actually what we're going for here. We're going to win. We're trying to win. We're going to do what we can to win. But the purpose of sport is not to win. The purpose of sport finds itself within the greater purpose of all human endeavors, which is that I become who God has created me to be so that I might inherit eternal life. And it's like, no, that's not the purpose of sport. Yes, it is. Actually, it's the purpose of sport is the same purpose of why I pray and the same purpose why I enter into relationships with people. The purpose of life and everything in it is to land myself in heaven. And so, in a particular way, the purpose of sport is to become who I was meant to be by the pursuit of these athletic endeavors and the growth of virtue and character and all these different ways where I really work my body and my mind, and it's a taxing effort, but it's to become better, not just in my body, but in my mind and my heart. in the way that I conduct myself. And so this is what we carry as the fundamental principle for our strategic plan, is that we are going to strive for victory. We're not sacrificing any of that. And we're going to strive for victory while we understand the purpose, which is that we all get to heaven. And we're going to hold that just as strongly as we hold the objective. And they don't have to go against each other. A lot of people think they do. Need to go against each other, but they don't have to go against each other. You can carry both of them. And it's really beautiful when you start to see it happen.
Just tremendous. Just tremendous. Fascinating stuff, folks, is it not? And I'm really grateful to Father Vosick for coming on the show today. And as I said at the beginning, all the great guests who've been on the show for what has now been 3 years, plus you, of course, the audience from, 75 countries around the world that have listened to this show since it launched at the start of February 2019. In addition, I'm grateful to the guests and listeners who have made a financial contribution to Catholic Sports Radio, since this is a ministry for me and I don't get any income from doing it, nor do I have any sponsors. As a result, all the expenses have to come out of my pocket, so that does get challenging. I've admitted that on a number of episodes, and I think I recently mentioned about a system email, is what I called it, that I received, and wondering what action needed to be taken. This was relative to behind-the-scenes work website-wise, like to keep it up to date, safe, functioning properly, etc. And that necessitated work being done that resulted in $35 that I had to come up with on my own. So that's just the latest example of what I use the money for when someone makes a financial contribution to this ministry. But when someone contributes to Catholic Sports Radio, it also tells me that you enjoy Catholic Sports Radio. You recognize and appreciate the work that I'm doing, and you want to see it continue and help people in their faith life. On CatholicSportsRadio.net, there is a Donate to CSR button that makes it fast and easy for you to contribute securely online in any amount you wish. There's no drop-down menu of amounts to choose from. You put in whatever you're comfortable with. Do please prayerfully consider what you can do for this ministry in terms of financial support to help me offset the various costs that I have detailed over a number of episodes of this show. And by the way, instead of doing it online, electronically, through the website, alternatively, as some folks have opted to do instead, you can get in touch with me through the contact section of CatholicSportsRadio.net to ask for the mailing address, and I will personally write you back with details on where you can send a check. And as you heard me do on the last 4 episodes, I will happily say on the air the name of anyone who contributes to this ministry. Or as some have chosen to do, you can remain anonymous. I'm grateful to everyone who listens to the show and would most appreciate your considering Catholic Sports Radio as part of your tithing as I continue working to use this ministry to bring more people closer to Christ. Father Vosick, talk about the Summer Institute that you're a part of, what that is, who's involved, who it's for, those types of details.
Yes, this is something that flows from our strategic plan. The first thing in our strategic plan is that we will offer virtue-based formation for our scholar athletes and for our coaches. The last thing on the list, which got switched up to the top because of COVID and pandemic things and lots of other reasons, was to develop an institute for faith, virtue, and sport. And so we were thinking that 10 years down the road, we were going to probably launch that, or 5 or 10, however many. But it got pushed up to the top of my responsibilities to develop it last year because just of dynamics and different things. So we launched it last year in kind of a soft fashion. And so what the institute is 3 days where we gather as many kind of top tier athletes, coaches, present or former from the different sports in the sports world, along with like sports psychologists, philosophers, theologians, and then other people who bear upon the world of sport, so that we can have meaningful conversations about what we just talked about, the objective, the purpose, virtue, growth, the transformation of sport, cultural conversion, these different things. And then who we want to come to that is absolutely anybody who thinks that that would be helpful to them, or even someone maybe doesn't think it'd be helpful, but maybe someone will bring them and then they'll realize that it was helpful. So we want coaches to come, we want administrators to come, we want youth sports people to come, we want faith-based ministries to come. We want all these people that are weighing in on the conversation of sport, faith, virtue, character, all these different things. We want this institute, these 3 days jam-packed with really top-tier speakers talking about the need for whatever it might be, like my accolades, Super Bowl champion, but like I realized that the bigger thing was my wife and kids and giving back to the community, and so I want to share a message about how you can do that and still be a Super Bowl champion or whatever. And like the conversations go on and on. So that's what we do. We'll be doing it again this summer in June. And I coordinate it. So I'm in touch with, you know, various people. I always shoot as big as I can to bring in people that are really navigating this excellence that we're looking for of holding both either faith and sport or virtue in sport or whatever that might be, where they just become a beacon, a bright light. And so we want to bring them here and then bring as many people as we can here. So that starts to rub off and more people see that you don't have to sacrifice athletic excellence and be a quote unquote good person or whatever, but to be really excellent in both. And that's what we're trying to lift up there. So we'll be launching it with a full goal this summer. It was soft launch last year. It'd be a hard launch, trying to get hundreds of people in the room for those 3 days. And I'm really looking forward to it. It was really beautiful last year. A lot of people came in with sort of hesitation, like, what exactly are we doing here? Because we're not dealing with X's and O's at all. We don't talk at all about playbooks or how to, you know, build your program, but rather, what does this look like to be a coach, to be an administrator, to be working with youth? To what does this look like to carry? If I say that the three things in my life are faith, family, football, and it, to everybody else's eyes, it looks like it's football, family, faith. Like, what are we going to do to sort of rectify that, you know? And so they came out of it. The people that came out of it like, that was way better than I thought it was going to be, and I'm really. This was really good. I'm really encouraged by this. We need more of this. And I was good.
To be clear, when you say that there's another one that'll be done this year, that's going to be in person. It's not a Zoom thing as probably happened during COVID times.
Yeah, people can Zoom in if they need to, but we want people on. North Dakota is pretty much open, and we have lots of events on campus that are just open. So we're not doing virtual stuff really anymore.
Okay.
So yeah, it'll be in person June 13th through 15th, and we're still getting the speaker list, but it'll be former NFL player kind of people, Hall of Fame, baseball, women that are doing excellent things in various realms. And the sports psychologist or mental health professionals, philosophers, different things. So weighing in on it from all these domains.
Fantastic. And obviously I don't need names, but I would love it if you could speak about some of the transformations that you have seen over the past 3 years for students.
Oh man, we should do another podcast on that one.
I was going to say, one or two examples, because I'm sure that you've seen tons.
Yeah. So when I got here, there were two focus missionaries that were devoted to coming over to the athletic department and trying to try to do things. And they were doing what they could. But by my position coming in, now they have total access to all of the coaches and all of the athletes and all the rosters. Just by coming to my office, we can go and do this. They didn't have to feel like they had to like try to knock and find ways in. They now have full access to all these things. So we have a female missionary and a male missionary from Varsity Catholic laboring. And so we've gone up. I don't know what it was when I got here. It didn't seem like there was a whole lot of like Bible studies and discipleship and growth, but we have a study on maybe not every single team, but I'd say we have 17 Bible studies out of the 19 teams, somewhere in there.
Wow.
With probably 150 athletes that are in Bible study right now. And that's even up from last year. We were maybe at like 80 last year. So, I mean, it's just, we're exploding there. In a particular way, our football team, which is our largest team, there's over 100 students on it. It was really difficult to try to figure out. But just, it's a big beast. Football is a big, big beast. But this past year, our missionary was able to move. Sort of, we had like four or five guys that were willing to do some things. We got in early in fall camp. In August, which we usually would start our outreach in September when school starts. But I said, we got to start it earlier. We got to get here when they get here and kind of figure this thing out. And so all of August, he and I both went around and just got to know all of the freshmen, all the transfers, all these people that we otherwise didn't know, and just got to know a lot more of the football guys a lot better. And the Bible study immediately got up to over a dozen, 15. And a bunch of the guys go to a conference. And now the guys on the football team are like, there's guys that are coming like, Father Vasek, Father V, oh man, there's some stuff going on, and some of these guys, they're inviting me to this, and holy cow, my eyes are getting open, and we gotta do something about this. And so, like, I mean, and there's story after story now of these young men in the football team that are their eyes are just like becoming open because there are other guys that they're now seeing willing to take steps for the Lord, and it's starting to come, instead of having one or two or three guys that were sort of, you know, just kind of going around, now there's a bulk of them. And so I say that's the most beautiful, is to see that our football program, both advancing in its success on the field, but that there is some real development of the interior life, the life of virtue, the life of faith among those football players. So I think that stands out. But I mean, there's particular examples of really profound encounters where students will come into my office and it's like, you know, I haven't practiced my faith since I was a kid, but like, I need something in my life. Like, things are going, I got injured, or you know, my girlfriend broke up with me, or I don't think, you know, it's not, things aren't going well on the team or whatever. I'm losing my identity. I'm sure you talk about this a lot with athletes, this sort of identity debacle. I can't figure out, who am I if I don't have my sport, and all these different things. And like, to watch them sort of realize, or not just sort of realize, but really start to realize, like, no, I belong to the Lord. Like, the Lord is my shepherd. No, I'm a daughter of the Father. I'm a son of the Most High God. And this is actually my deepest identity, Father. I'm like, yeah, I know. And so, I mean, this is just, it's over and over, and it's really, really beautiful. Wow. So yeah, we're seeing a lot of it now. It's really beautiful.
Tremendous, tremendous. I was once interviewed on someone else's show, and I remember them bringing up virtue and sport. You have a view of the integration of virtue with mental health, specifically in athletics. Can you talk about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I want to be delicate, and I don't want to misspeak. So I'm going to say that right up front. What I'm going to say is not that all mental health problems are because people don't have virtue. I recognize that there are different chemical realities, different biological, physiological, various things that can harm a person's mental health. So I'm not dismissing any of that at all. But a lot of the conversation when we're talking about virtue gets thwarted by various people, and they'll stop and they'll say, we don't need to talk about virtue right now. We need to talk about mental health. I'm like, well, what do you mean by mental health? It's like, well, stress and anxiety and depression. Okay, got it. What do you mean by what are the causes of stress, anxiety, and depression? Like, what are those different things? Well, you know, like, school's tough, and, you know, I'm trying to fit in and all these different things. Okay, great. So let's talk about what stresses you have in your life. And they're like, well, I've got all this homework. Okay, so do you schedule in time for your homework? Or do you like hang out with your friends a bunch, and then you have to like panic and like cram to do your homework and your tests, and you're staying up really late because of it, because you didn't schedule it earlier and you could have. Right. And they're like, yeah, it is that. And it's like, okay. So the result is that you have poor mental health. The cause is not your mental health. It can be. Now, again, don't misunderstand. Yep. But the cause is that you're lazy and you procrastinate and you don't have any temperance. You don't have any prudence. Like, right. So let's figure out how to be prudent. Let's figure out how to be temperate. Let's figure out how to be moderate. Let's figure out how to have a full night of sleep. Let's figure out how to drink water when you're supposed to drink water. Let's figure out how to be humble. Let's figure out how to be courageous. Let's figure out these things. Wow. These are the causes of positive and strong mental health, because these are the powers. Virtues are the powers of the soul for the good of the human person. When you have those things working together, you're going to have a much better shot of having strong mental health than to become a victim of your own laziness or poor choices. I know all about it. I mean, I was a high schooler. I know all about it. So it's not to dismiss the talk that we have to have about mental health with regard to chemical, biological, neurological, all these different things. But a lot of our mental health struggles that I find is that people don't have any virtue, and that's why they're struggling. And because they're clamoring for their identity in their sport, or they're clamoring for their identity in their friends rather than the Lord, then it's wishy-washy and it can go up and down really fast. And if they could be humble and find themselves rooted in the Lord, then it's not going to be such a bother when someone rejects them or when the coach benches them.
I love
the
it.
Mental health so much. So, I mean, that's a nutshell.
I love it. I love it. It's a very hearty nutshell. That's great. You have worked extensively with the Missionaries of Charity of St. Teresa of Calcutta in Europe, Asia, Africa, and here in North America. Can you share some of that experience with us?
I'll try to be brief. I know I'm going on and on and on, Bruce. When I was,
I'm just fascinated by this. I had to ask. It's kind of off topic, but it's. I read that and I thought I want to hear more, especially doing it so globally.
Yeah, no, it's so beautiful. So when I was ordained a priest, I was still living in Rome, and I had another year as a priest in Rome, and I knew I was going to have a salary now, and I didn't want to just kind of travel around like a tourist around Europe, but I did want to see Europe, but I wanted to experience it as a priest, and I didn't really know what that even meant, but another buddy, a buddy of mine, said he felt the same way, he sensed the same thing, and so we went down to the Missionary of Charity soup kitchen near the Vatican, and asked them if they could send us somewhere for Christmas for our break to a Missionary of Charity convent in whatever country that could need help. And they're like, Father, pick any convent. They all need help. And I was like, well, you know your community better than us, so send us wherever. So we ended up going to Romania, to Bucharest for the octave of Christmas. And so we were with the handicapped children that they worked with. And then we went and worked to minister to the gypsies and they're in their roaming camps and the gypsy pimps. And it was very, actually quite scary. I could go on a long story about that. But then we spent time with the Missionary of Charity there, serving with them, but serving them in a particular way, not just serving with them, serving them, hearing their confessions, giving them talks, praying with them, these things. And then we came back and we said, Sister, we'd like to do the same thing for Easter. And so she's like, well, okay, we're going to send you to Armenia. So we went to Yerevan, Armenia. I didn't know it was a country. So I went there and did that. And then we were kind of hooked at that point. And the sisters really enjoyed my friend and myself, Father John Burns and myself. And so then he was at a convent where some of the sisters asked him to go and give a retreat somewhere because they'd been hearing of our care for the sisters and that we care about them and that we're good priests, and et cetera. So then he went down to Africa. I went with him to give a retreat to the sisters. And then I was asked to give a retreat in London. So then we went there. Okay. And then we were asked to give a retreat in Spain and then in France. And then we're going to Scotland this summer. Mm-hmm. And I was in India a couple years ago on sabbatical at Mother House, and it just kind of goes on and on. We give these retreats to the sisters and labor with them, with the poor, but mostly it's to minister to them. And it's been a great way to see the world through a Catholic institution. And wherever I am in the world, it becomes really practical because their community language is English wherever they are. And so the Catholic world of that local place and those who can speak English in that Catholic world typically come around to the convent. So we can get into the community, get into the Catholic life, get into the culture, without language barriers and without cultural barriers, there to help. So it's been a great blessing for my friend and myself over the last decade, and we're so glad we get to keep doing it.
Yeah, I can tell by the enthusiasm in your voice, and it's all super. And we just may well have to have you back on another episode to you know get a little bit more into that and some of these stories that you've had a front row seat for, you know, the transformations with the students and some other things that we're not able to get to. But I do need to wrap up. It's not very often, but occasionally as a closing question, I would ask a guest about a favorite Bible verse. One that's very common when people talk about the mix of faith and sports is 1 Corinthians 9. Yeah. So let's close by having you share your insights on that passage.
Yeah, so 1 Corinthians chapter 9, in the heart of it, runs so as to win, and for a crown that is imperishable rather than one that is perishable. It's a magnificent work by St. Paul. He who is in Greece, understanding the Olympics, understanding that Gentile way, and then leaning in with this kind of drawing together two principles, the one of the pursuit of eternity, which we're calling here at the purpose of sport, and then also this objective that you run us to win. So the way that he does that, and I like to marry it with Hebrews chapter 12, because in Hebrews chapter 11, where there's the catalog of all these great ones of the faith, and at the beginning of Hebrews 12, therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, and again, the author is kind of almost as if all of these great heroes of the history of the Old Testament, New Testament, starting are like a sort of in an arena surrounding this race and watching us. And it's like, don't just run so as to win, not just to pursue this perishable, but the imperishable crown of glory with these saints. And it's so good. I mean, my swimmers don't like it because they're like, Father, should we swim so as to win, not run so as to win. I'm sorry he didn't use that, but we're going to go with it. And I find it it helps so much when I'm working with the non-athletes on campus to talk about this. Like, our athletes, they are working their tails off. They are disciplined. They are getting after. They're sacrificing. They're doing all these things so they can win. What are you? Are you doing the same thing complementary in your Christian walk? Yeah. Are you getting up early to pray? Are you fasting? Are you growing in your love of God? Are you are you studying? Are you going out? Are you serving? Are you doing the corporal and spiritual works? Are you doing it at the highest competitive level? Not because you're trying to compete against someone else, but because you're going to do it in this excellent manner before the Lord, the same way that our athletes are. And then I do that so that I can then come back to the athletes and say, hey, here's what I said to the non-athletes about how awesome you are and all these things that you're doing. But before I finish, then, are you doing that, athletes? That's right. You're working so hard for all these different things. Are you working that hard to become an excellent young man or woman? Are you working that hard to become a saint? Are you working that hard to pursue greatness in all these different domains in your life? You need to. You need to.
Well, yeah, because if you tell them this is what I'm telling all the non-athletes, then it's almost, in a sense, you have an opportunity not to go and be a winner and show them how gifted you are athletically, but you have an opportunity to, quote unquote, be a role model and show them that you are living in the way that I'm challenging them to, even though they're not athletes. So it all just blends together so wonderfully. And I love what you're doing with the student athletes and the non-student athletes, because it is a real good opportunity for them to all look at that and say, okay, this can relate to me, you know, swimmers included, non-athletes, and you know, whether they're reading the Bible or not, it is very practical. Like you said, it's as though it was written of us being watched in an arena.
And to come back to something you mentioned earlier, not that it applies here, but there has been a really particular gift that I have a history in athletics as I work with these scholar athletes. I don't think a chaplain would need to, but it's been super helpful. So I actually do end up becoming a coach from time to time, like actual coaching, because I was watching one of our high jumpers. That's what I went to state in track and field, is the high jump. And she was hitting the bar, but she was closing in on her PR, and the coach missed it. And he came up, he's like, Hey, father, got any tips? And he was joking. And I said, well, actually, I think she needs to take a half step back, 'cause she's hitting it on the way up. And if she was a little bit further out, she'd clear it, no problem. So then she did it, and she got her PR. She just ran over to me. I barely knew her. She ran over to me. She just got her PR at college. She just ran over. She just embraced me. She's like, thank you so much. So, I mean, there's a little bit of coaching going on as well anyway. Not that that applies at this point in the conversation, but cool, it's just one of those fun little things to finish our time.
That's cool. Well, and folks, as much as I want to thank Father Vosick for being on the show, and I know this has been great, and I think we would all certainly welcome him back, I don't want to let him go yet, because if you've been listening long enough, you know that when I have a member of the clergy on, I'm always very eager to defer to let the guest do the closing prayer instead of me, and Father Vosick has been kind enough to agree to do that for us. So we will close, as we always do, in prayer, and Father Vosick, at this point, I'll turn it over to you.
Great. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Heavenly Father, we recognize that you are over all, that you have created and sustained all things. We thank you for the gift of our creation, the many ways in which you have blessed us and given us so many beautiful traits and gifts and talents, and that you're designing our lives in such beautiful ways. So we just want to thank you in this moment for all of that. We thank you for the gift of athletics. We ask that it would continue to be a gift, that you would purify the domain of sport, that you would bring about a great conversion through so many faithful witnesses, to convert this beautiful platform in our American society, so that it would be truly for your glory. I thank you for the ministry of Bruce and Catholic Sports Radio. I ask that you would bless him and bless those that he works with and for, and all those listeners. Pour out your blessing upon us, that we might respond to your many invitations to become great of mind, of heart, of body, of being, that we would truly become saints. So we just ask that you pour out your blessing upon us in Jesus' name, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Thanks so much for listening. This is Catholic Sports Radio. Find more at catholicsportsradio.net, as well as on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It is at Cath Sports Radio on all those, C-A-T-H, at Cath Sports Radio. I'm Bruce Wozniak, and remember, it's not whether you win or lose, it's that it's Jesus that you always choose.
We'll be right back.